As I begin, I want to share a portion of a blog entry that I read this week that relates to this week's gospel lesson. A Lutheran pastor with almost 20 years of experience in parish ministry writes of his experience with declining denominational churches, and that has characterized really the last 40 years of our American religious history. "During my tenure as a pastor," he writes, "I have served three different congregations that had each experienced such long-term decline and loss in previous decades that it seemed to me as if the end of the world was upon us. They had lost recognition in the community, members, ministries, and their passion for mission. But the loss that was talked about most often was the loss of financial resources. Each of the congregations had gone to the bishop pleading for a new, young, messianic minister who would have the right personality, know the right things, possess the right skills, make the right moves, and cast the right vision. The goal was to miraculously reverse a 20 to 30 year decline, restoring the congregation to an earlier age of youthful energy, ample resources, community standing, and thriving membership." This pastor reflects that in this week's gospel lesson, even Jesus wouldn't have fit the bill of what they were looking for. In first century Israel, people wanted a pastor. They wanted a Messiah who would save them from the seemingly inevitable end of their world. Yet, in the gospel lesson this morning, when the disciples point to the impressive beauty and splendor of the temple, Jesus announces it will be destroyed, flattened into rubble. He describes a scenario that only moves from bad to worse, with a list of doomsday happenings that would signal the end of anyone's world. But then he shifts his focus, telling the disciples the end is not theirs to know, but that creation's true end, God and God's rule, is assured. Instead of giving them what they want, instead of sweeping in with a quick fix solution to their current dilemma, Jesus switches into the cadences of the prophets, like Isaiah, whom we heard from in the first lesson this morning. And in so doing, he reaches into the past to remind them of their future. Like Isaiah, who said, "I am about to create a new heaven and a new earth. No more shall the sound of weeping be heard in Jerusalem, nor the cry of distress." It's as if Jesus is saying, in the midst of all this dire stuff that you are going to experience, remember what you and those before you have received from God throughout the ages, the wisdom that God is living and active, and let that bear you through the present into the future. I'm reminded of the essay by the Danish philosopher and theologian Soren Kierkegaard on the difference between a genius and an apostle. A genius may bring us new knowledge, he says, like Watson and Crick brought us the revelations about the structure of the DNA molecule, Einstein. But that knowledge is knowledge that, no matter how remarkable it is, can always be supplanted or outshined by even greater genius. Newtonian physics has begun to be eclipsed by the new discoveries of quantum physics. An apostle doesn't have to possess, however, any special intelligence. He or she simply passes on a message that he or she has received from the past, a message that is timeless in its ability to make us stop dead in our tracks and reevaluate the world, not on our terms, but on God's terms. An apostle helps us remember the truth that God is and always has been faithful. And as Isaiah said, God is always in the midst of the present, creating a future with hope. You don't have to be a genius to pass along that message. The people in Jesus' time wanted a Messiah who would be a genius. The churches that our Lutheran blogger friend writes about wanted a genius. But Jesus' genius is that he doesn't take on that burden. He doesn't take on the job. Instead, he puts the responsibility back on us. He says, if you will be faithful to what you have received from God, if you will testify, be a witness, pass along the words and the wisdom that comes from God alone, you will be a part of the present, of God's working in the present to create that future with a hope. We are in the midst of stewardship season at St. Francis, when we reflect on our response to God's faithfulness to us, on how faithful is our response to God's faithfulness first to us. Our Bishop Diane Bruce, one of our new suffragan bishops, when she was visiting with us this summer with our stewardship commission, she said, "Stewardship is everything I do after I say I believe. It's everything I do after I say I believe." How am I living in response to that? What is it that brought us to believe? Each of us here today has some, maybe it's torn to shreds by life, but we have some relationship with God. We may have doubts, we may struggle with the institutional church, we may be very deeply grounded in a sense of God's peace. All of us are in different places, but something brought us here. Somewhere along the line, God first touched us. God gives gift upon gift upon gift. And God is calling us to take everything we have received, to pass it on, to pay it forward. God does not call us to be the Messiah, not me, not you, not anyone. God doesn't call us to be geniuses. The Messiah has already come. But we are called to be apostles, to be witnesses. Stewardship is everything I do after I say I believe. In a few moments, you'll hear a testimony on stewardship from Jill Fenske. We've heard from John Bukowski and from Cheryl Gutierrez the week before. And I hope that these testimonies of a personal nature give you an opportunity to reflect on your testimony. How are we passing on the message that we have received? How are we making our testimony? Amen.